You are listening to From a Stranger to a Stranger. This is Issa Martel. Today is the 29th of Muharram in the year 1440, which corresponds to October the 9th, 2011, in our common era of which we keep time, supposedly according to, I don't know if it's the birth of Jesus or his death or whatever, but back then, that's when they're saying. In any case, here we are again. I haven't talked about this thing in a while, probably a good 15 years or so, but I figured I'll bring it up here since the intent of this podcast is kind of to talk about sign of like a autobiography type of thing. But in any case, in May 20th, 1996, I was sentenced to 18 to 48 months, that was my sentence. I was convicted of a misdemeanor, which I had plead down from a felony. And I'll get into the reason and what happened behind that on another day, because that's can take up the whole podcast. But this I want to be more focused about what it's like to be incarcerated and what that does to a person's personality, a person's psyche, coming out of that, what it's like, and these types of things. I will say, though, that with regards to how I ended up in a jail or prison, I feel that even till this day, 20 some years later, I feel that I was unjustly convicted. I had to take a plea. While I plead guilty to the law, I feel that the law was unjustly used and therefore abused to make a case out of something that wasn't necessarily a case. The law, this was back in Pennsylvania, the law that I was convicted with had just been put into place maybe 6 months prior to my arrest. It was the first time the county ever got to use it. It was like the second or third time in the state. So it was basically the DA was wetting his pants over it. The judge, Joseph Pinella, who I have absolutely zero respect for, ate it up. The police department, the Bethlehem Police Department, the detectives on the case, all them, not the police department as a whole, but those specific individuals, I think are absolute trash. The Allentown Police Department, the Allentown detectives, those people that worked on it are garbage. They're just manipulative, weasel-like individuals. So I have very little respect for them. And this is not law enforcement in general, but specifically those individuals and individuals like them, which I firmly believe are out there to this day. So that aside, I'll get into that in more detail on another day, because like I said, that's not what this is about, but I wanted to kind of pretext this with that, because that plays a lot into my thoughts about law enforcement and things that went on from that point on in my life. A friend of mine mentioned the other day to me on the phone, we were talking about politics and stuff, and he had mentioned to me that we're pretty much similar, except for the issue of like police. And I noticed this with a lot of people, that politically and just morally and stuff like this, I have, I would say it's leans more toward a conservative side of the spectrum of things. While I do have views that would be considered very liberal, and I have friends on both sides of the spectrum, in general, my ideas would probably be conservative. And this person, you know, kind of has the same thing. And I notice I have this with a lot of people, traditional conservative type of views. But those people typically are 100% behind the police, which in general I am. But when I see corruption amongst the police, it really bothers me, because I had seen this firsthand and experienced it firsthand. And unless you have done that, unless you've been unjustly convicted of something, accused of something, you just don't get it. I mean, you might get it from a theoretical point of view, but it just strikes a bone with you when people call you things that you're not, and especially when it's the police, because the police have, the police and law enforcement in general works obviously with the media, and, you know, the media can push something one way or the other. And when they push it the way that's against you, and it's against you falsely, it's really a problem, and it's really bothersome. Anyway, so May 20th, 1996, I entered the Pennsylvania State prison system, I guess. It was technically the county I had to go to first on my sentence. And just to give you an example of this, my sentencing, when it took this plea, my sentencing was supposed to be just like 6 months, right? But because I called out the hypocrisy and the unjustness of the system, during my sentencing, the judge called the break, left the bench, left the room, came back about a couple minutes later, and gave me 18 to 48, which was the maximum sentence he can possibly give me. So that just shows the bastardness that these people do, right? That just completely blew my mind away, blew everyone's mind away, pretty much, and it was just like a big F you to me. So that dude, just Joseph Pinella, I don't know where he's at now. I don't know if he's still in law. He probably is. He probably has a higher position than judge now, but F him. He's a piece of trash. And at the time, everyone hated him as a judge anyway. He was the harshest and most bastardly judge, and I wasn't even supposed to have him for sentencing, but they gave him to me at the last minute, like an hour before the sentencing. They switched it to be him, and whatever, man. It's just the whole system is corrupted, and I really despise pretty much all of it in when it goes in that direction. Obviously, you need police and stuff and law, but when it goes wrong, it is an issue. So, like I was saying, I entered the system on May of 1996. And it's interesting when you go to jail the first couple days, at least in, I think everywhere, but I'll be specific. This is Northampton County, Pennsylvania. You go into intake for 3 days. So intake is a cell. It is like they're separated from the rest of the main jail. It's typically while you're processed and your paperwork is going through, and maybe they're moving people around in the main jail to get you a spot or whatever. But where you're at is an area where there's no windows. You're in a cell for 23 hours out of the day. You get to get out for an hour to take a shower, to use the phone, or just to do walk around or do some exercising. Granted, you can't walk around too far because there's like four cells there, and they open up into a kind of like a little area that's like a, I'd say like a rec area, we'd call it, but there's no equipment or anything now. And now it might be different now, but I'm talking about how it was back in 1996. So this experience, entering is 100% designed to demoralize you and to make you, if you're gonna break or have any issues, I would imagine that this process is designed to pick them out and trigger them right away, so that down the line it might not be, it might not surprise people. Also, if people come in drunk or high or something, they'll detox right there. But really, what goes on is the realization of what's going on. You realize whatever it is you've done, what's about to happen, kind of like what your fate is. And it sucks. I mean, there's no getting around that aspect. It's really, really like, I don't want to say it's humiliating, but it's very demoralizing, I guess. Especially if you think you didn't do anything wrong, so, and you're looking at possibly sitting there for 4 years. So, in that case, it's really like an issue. So when I was there, I remember the guy who was in the cell with me. I don't remember his name. I'm actually really bad with names. So back then, that's like 22 years ago, I ain't gonna remember someone's name, but I remember his face. And he was in on some drug charge or something. And he was really, really stressing. And, you know, I told him, he asked why I was there, whatever, and I explained to him what the case was. And I don't know if it relieved him or something, but he was really having issues with being there. So that was kind of like my first interaction with someone who is having problems in the jail setting. Like, it was like mentally like breaking him. And like I said, you're there for 3 days. There's no windows or anything. The lights are on for I don't know how many hours. They shut them off at night to go to sleep, and then they're turned back on. You're let out I don't remember what time, but maybe say like noon, you're let out for an hour. They kind of cycle through the cells, so not everyone's out at the same time, because I think there was only like one shower or two showers or something. But the interesting thing is that you have to use the toilet, and I don't know if you ever watch these shows on A&E or whatever, like Lock Up or something. You have to use the toilet kind of like in full view of everyone, which was, you know, something I've never done before prior to this. So, you know, even in that way, it's like demoralizing. Like I said, the whole system, while you're there, just reinforces this idea that you're trash. And what I had come to realize through my stay there over the time, the whole time, is that an inmate is the lowest form of, I don't know what we'd call what we are, like, I'd say the lowest form of citizen, but kind of like the class, like, you know, whatever it is, you're lower than a homeless person, right? Because you have absolutely no rights. Everything is completely dictated to you. And there's no, you're constantly beat down and constantly just like demoralized. And there's never really a payoff. Like there's not, like say for instance, like if you go to the military, you know, you might go to boot camp or something, and it has like this a similar breakdown, but there is a payoff after a couple weeks. You know what I mean? You know what the payoff is. You're rewarded with rank or successful completion or whatever it is, you know. And that's not the case there. The only reward you get there is if, you know, when you get out. But that, like for me, on that day, I was looking at, the beginning, I was looking at least 18 months, which is a year and a half, that I was going to be sitting here. So that was kind of something I realized after a while. You're the lowest, you're basically like the scum of society. And that stigma sticks with you for a while, even after you get out, because you're trying to get a job and stuff like this, but you know, you got to put on your job application that you got a record, because for some reason, places do background checks when they're irrelevant to the job. And this is just another garbage aspect of our society that tries to keep people at a state where they aren't going to be able to be successful. So, you know, even after when you get out, you got to put, okay, well, I got out of jail last week or something. And that's it. you know, so, you know, typically, unless you're working for a company that's big, you know, the reality is a employer ain't gonna hire you, and, you know, you're gonna get hired at a crap minimum pay an hour job, like fast food or something like this, until after a while, the background checks don't go back that far, you know, which sucks because it ruins your life, you know. And you can argue like, well, whatever you were in, you might have ruined someone else's life or whatever. But the fact is that we promote a concept, a bunch of concepts. One, you're innocent until proven guilty, which is a bull crap thing. That's not how it, even though that's how it's supposed to be, the reality is that's not how it is. that's not something that's put into practice. We see that all the time with cases that are going on in the media and stuff like that. You're, as soon as there's an accusation, you're pretty much marked as guilty. If you're innocent, if you were slandered or whatever on the media, they never rectify that, and you're pretty much stained with that forever. So there's that innocent until proven guilty, and there's also do the crime, do the time, right? Which is another crap. Because once you do your time, you get out. And it's not like that you're returned back to society as an upstanding citizen. So, because of the fact that they do background checks, right? Why do you need a background check to work at McDonald's, say? You know what I mean? Or whatever. I mean, yes, of course, there's some jobs that require a background check. But they should be background checking for something that's relative to the job. Like, obviously, if you're working in a bank, it makes sense that they might do a background check to see if you have any convictions of being like a bank robber or a thief or something like this. That would make sense, you know, or some sort of security or something like this. These things make sense. But most of the jobs out there, you don't need a background check. To work at a store, there's no reason to have a background check, you know, like a store in the mall or something like this. No. On top of it now, you know, in that same regard, they do credit checks, see if you declared bankruptcy and stuff. What does that absolutely have nothing to do with your ability to work, you know? And if you did, so what? You know, that was obviously years ago, you know? For example, background checks typically go back 7 years. Some go back 10 years. So from the moment you are get out of jail or whatever, and you get to look for a job, you got to check yes to that. Well, you don't have to, but they're going to do a background check and find out anyway. You have to check yes for 7 years. So for 7 years, you can be denied your job because of that, even though the employer will never say that. They'll never admit that they didn't hire you because you have a criminal record. Let's just be real, and that's the reality that they're going to. So these are ways that the system is set up that people don't really see unless they've gone through the system on how it affects you your whole life, you know. Especially if you have a felony charge, right? If you have a felony, you know, I have issues with the concept that felons can't own firearms or can't vote. You know, it's like, what is this have anything to do, especially if that was, you know, 30 years ago, you caught a felony when you were 18 or 19, now you're 70, you never had anything else since then, you can't have your voting rights or your gun rights back, you know, that's another major issue, like, goes back to the do the crime, do your time type of thing, right? It's complete BS, but this is the way the system is, the politics roll this way. You know, it's cater to a certain group of people in society, and let's just do that. Let's keep making laws and rules to make everything harder for people who have either made a mistake or did something wrong unintentionally or intentionally, and keep them down. Let's do that. Keep people incarcerated longer, you know, make their lives miserable, you know, publicly display their stuff, which I don't really have an issue with publicly putting it out there, but that just opens the door for a whole lot of other things that are negative. And, you know, I don't feel that people knowing your background or whatever needs to be public knowledge, or you don't need to be slandered against, like I said, and the media never takes that back. So if they slandered you for, or they painted you as a picture, while you're just accused of something, they painted you as this heinous beast for like a year while there's like going on a trial or something, then you're, you know, found not guilty or something like this. They don't spend a year building your character back to good standing. They just, that's it, you know. And then so you'll have people that, even though you are not convicted, there's no evidence of anything, they'll still have people that are saying, no, this person's this, you know. Maybe intentionally or unintentionally because they didn't know or get the result of the innocence verdict. So after those 3 days in intake, you go into the general population. In my case, I was put into a cell that had three other people. The interesting thing I found at this point, so this is like day four, was that everybody already knew me, and I didn't know anyone. And they knew me because my case was so big, it was in the papers. And so when you're in jail, you pretty much don't have anything to do. So a lot of the people read the paper. And so, it's interesting. Not everyone reads the papers. There's like a certain age demographic of people that read the papers and people that don't. I don't know what they do now, but like I said, we didn't have cell phones or anything back then. Are these smartphones? There were cell phones, but, you know, this is the case of that era. So they knew who I was. They knew my case. They knew what happened. And the prisoners knew I got pretty much it was BS what happened to me. I got to then spend time in the jail. I experienced this weird sense of seeing this aspect of our society. And it's fascinating. I watch a lot of the lockup shows and all this now. And I don't know why. I think it's like maybe as some strange reminder that I was in this place and I came out of it. And, you know, to just, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. But I do know that I'm sure that this experience somehow affected me so much that I would say it's one of the like defining moments of my life, this time spent incarcerated. And it was my age too. I was like 22, I think, when I went in there. So, you know, I was pretty much, you know, young. And going through this experience. So I spent time in there. The general population was interesting. They kind of watch you. If you don't go out to the yard for a couple days in a row or something, they kind of make you go at least take a shower or something like that, because I'm sure they're watching for signs of depression or whatever, this type of stuff that goes on. And you basically have a lot of times to think. You watch stuff happen. When I went in there, I wasn't really religious. but religion is something that a lot of people find in prison. And it's because you're removed from everything else. So you're removed from all the distractions in life that keep you from thinking about religion. Or reflecting upon your life in general. You know, we're so caught up in the day-to-day, going to work or whatever, that we miss out a lot of just simple reflection. And in general, I feel that now, I'm obviously older, I feel that having this balance in your life is necessary. And if it's not, if you're not religious, be it you're atheist or whatever, you don't believe in a quote-unquote Abrahamic God or something, you still need some form of balance in your life, some quote-unquote spiritualness or spirituality, whether it's you go to do yoga, you go to the gym or something, you need that. You need something to break away from this routine of every day, go to work, come home, pay the bills, whatever.